A podcast.
Oh, he's pop blocking and dropping it, just so everyone knows.
No, now I'm pop blocking.
He perfected salsa and now into this.
Okay. Hello and welcome to Jesuitical, a podcast from the solemnly young, repentantly hip, and prayerfully lay editors of American Media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I'm Ashley McKinless, joined by Olga Segura.
Hey, guys.
And Zach Davis.
Hello.
I don't feel very solemn, but...
But we are. So we are solemn,
repentant,
because
it's still Lent.
Our hearts are solemn.
Yes. And because it's Lent...
What's on tap, Zach?
Absolutely nothing. Do I have to say that every week during Lent? Mm-hmm.
It's part of being solemn, Zach.
Right, so, yep, for Lent, we are not drinking. So
day seven. Things are getting desperate.
Yes.
But who are we talking to this week, Olga?
Today, we're talking to Luigi Gioia, who's a professor at the Pontifical University of Sant'Anselmo in Rome, and he also is the author of Say It to God in Search of Prayer. So we're going to be talking to him about prayer and just getting really vulnerable in our relationships with God, which mm-hmm. we've talked about in the past. We're not super, at least I'm not comfortable talking about prayer, but this, what about you guys?
Well, we should note that this book is the official pick from the Archbishop of Canterbury. And so mm-hmm. there's this.
For Lent.
Yeah. Yes. So the official Lent book, if you're looking for one.
I read this and I was like, Archbishop of Canterbury, nice choice. I think I will read this for Lent too.
Yeah, no, it's really great. I would recommend it to all our listeners, and you're going to want to read it after you hear this interview, I'm sure.
Agreed.
But first, Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to. What's first, Olga?
So another update regarding the handling of the sexual abuse crisis within the church. We've been keeping you guys updated with Pope Francis. Last month, he got a lot of criticism for the way he spoke about the victims, and after that, he sent Charles Cicluna to Chile to meet with victims. But before that, he stopped in New York and he met with Juan Carlos Cruz. And then in Chile, he met with another survivor called James Hamilton. And they both appear to be very hopeful. James Hamilton has said that, "I have no doubt that Monsignor Cicluna is going to share with the Pope what is really happening in Chile."
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Cruz also said that he really felt heard, which I think is very important, because it did seem like after the Pope's trip to Chile that they did not feel heard.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they mm-hmm. felt kind of shut out. We also learned this week that the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, which was founded in 2014, but had lapsed last December, and then we were just kind of like waiting around for it to be, reconstituted. This week we learned that it has been reconstituted. It has 16 members, 8 men, 8 women. 2 of them are survivors who have chosen to remain anonymous, but will be giving their voices to that commission.
So Ashley, what exactly does the commission do?
Okay, so actual individual cases of abuse go through the CDF, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. This commission was set up specifically as kind of like to educate bishops' conferences and the head of religious orders about best practices to prevent abuse and to, hold bishops or priests accountable for past instances of abuse. But I don't know, you guys have heard the expression, like, died by committee.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they had this big announcement about creating a website. I checked out the website today, and there are a lot of pages that say, this will be constantly updated, and there's, like, nothing on the page.
Oh, no.
And last year, they announced that they were going to have a tribunal to hold bishops accountable who had been negligent in dealing with abuse, and that tribunal still does not exist. So it seems to be moving slowly. So it's great that it's been reconstituted, but it would be nice to see some more concrete action. And in other Vatican news, Zach?
Yes, Pope Francis is inviting 300 young people to the Vatican next month.
Where's our invite?
I think
it's in the mail, guys.
Yeah, it maybe got sure lost in the mail. Always the bridesmaid, never the...
I think those are two different...
Yeah. Not the same thing. All right. but he's inviting young people from all around the world to present their sort of their hopes and their dreams and mm-hmm. worries and concerns for the upcoming Synod on the Youth.
And a former Jesuitical guest, Nicole Perrone, I believe, is one of the people where the mail actually came to her and she's going to go.
Yeah, she got the mail. She RSVP'd, yes. So Hopefully she can provide Jesuitical with the inside scoop on what's going on.
Very good.
What's our next story, Ashley? You got a little hometown.
Yeah, from the Vatican to Arlington, Virginia. Mark Arbin is a Catholic convert in Northern Virginia, and he is going to be the first chaplain to the U.S. Secret Service. Most law enforcement and federal agencies have a chaplain, which might be surprising because it's not like they're volunteering. Like, it's a position that, you know, is a public position.
Mm-hmm. Right, so even Congress has a chaplain.
Yeah, no, so we visited the chaplain of Congress back in 2016. Is that right, Zach?
Yep.
Yeah, and so they, you know, they're there as a resource. They don't, you know, they can come from a specific background, but they're supposed to provide, you know, spiritual support and counseling to anyone from any religion.
So who is he ministering to?
Yeah.
It's a secret, Zach. I can't tell you.
You guys.
All right, what's next, Olga?
So last week, the Senate failed to pass legislation that would secure protection for Dreamers who are here under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, or DACA. And DACA is set to expire on March 5th. So next week, U.S. bishops have declared February 26th a national call-in day for Dreamers. They're encouraging all Catholics to call their members of Congress and urge them to take action for Dreamers.
Yeah, so something I've used in the past is this app for the iPhone called Capital Call. And once you fire that up, you type in your zip code, it pulls up all of your representatives and at the state, local, and federal level, and has their phone numbers super handy. And it even has like a little bit of like a cheat sheet on like what to expect when you call.
All right, so no excuses. Everyone call your congressperson.
So what's next, Ashley?
So last week, while we were recording, there was the terrible mass shooting at the high school in Parkland, Florida, which fell on Ash Wednesday and Valentine's Day. And I think one of the most like iconic images to come out of that was a woman consoling someone else with the ashes on her forehead.
It's almost like an icon almost.
Yeah. Right. No. So, I mean, I really, you know, we wanted to address this even though it's a little bit late, because it seems like, you know, obviously it was random and it happened on Ash Wednesday. It's terrible, but it does raise questions about what our country should do in response in this spirit of repentance. So I don't know, how did you guys react to this?
One of the things I've noticed is what feels different this time, and is I think the voice of the survivors is really coming through, and I think that's because they're all digital natives. Mm-hmm. And so they have been really finessing like platforms and media attention and like speaking up for themselves and like convincing Congress people to like pass legislation so they don't get like killed for going to school. That's been encouraging, but also like because they're like speaking up for themselves, you also have people like attacking like these kid advocates who are just like begging for their lives. And so that has been also somewhat depressing as well.
Yeah. I agree, Zach. It's been, it was a little shocking at first to see the way that all of these students were sharing what they were going through on social media. But they've reacted in a way that a lot of adults our age might not even be able to do, you know? So it's been really encouraging to see just the student response following something so tragic.
It does feel like we'll see. It's still, recording this on Wednesday. I mean, who knows what'll happen in the coming weeks. But it feels like there's somewhat of a Kairos moment. Things feel ripe for changing.
So this is obviously something we're thinking about, praying about. And listeners, we want to hear your perspective. So please, you know, let us know. You can email us or tweet us. We will be talking about this more, I'm sure.
Today, we're talking with Luigi Gioia, a professor at the Pontifical University of Sant'Anselmo in Rome and author of Say It to God, In Search of Prayer. Welcome to Jesuitical, Luigi.
Hello. Lovely to be here.
So good to have you.
Yeah, we're very, very excited. So this is the first official book of Lent. The Archbishop of Canterbury selected it as the Lent book of 2018. Yes. What did you want to do with this opportunity?
Well, I suppose that the first thing I like about it is that it is a book written by a Roman Catholic, and it has been recommended by the head of the Anglican Church.
Was that a surprise? Did you know that was coming?
No, I didn't. So I was obviously told a few months ago, but before then I had no idea. So I gave the book to my publisher over a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. The book should have been out almost a year ago. But then because it was chosen by the Archbishop, the publishing was delayed by another 6 or 8 months. But it came quite as a big surprise.
Do you know why he chose it?
He liked it, Ashley.
Not
it is
I'm
an
surprised.
Immensely deep, profound book written by a very interesting person. No, there are several reasons, I think. One is that Justin Welby is his name. He is very sympathetic towards Catholicism. So he would say about himself that he has a Jesuit spirituality. Mm. And I remember being at a gathering with a lot of evangelicals who know very little about Catholicism. And he spoke there and he said that, you know, I follow the Jesuit spirituality and nobody understanding what that meant. And I had to explain this to a lot of people. His wife preaches retreats with the Jesuit spirituality. Then they are very close to a community called Chemin Neuf, as a French community, charismatic Catholic community. And when Justin moved into Lambeth Palace, which is a huge residence in the center of London, he found that it was too big just for him and his wife. There are, you know, dozens and dozens of rooms. So he asked the community of Chemin Neuf to come and live with him. Mm. So the community sent 3 or 4 brothers and 3 or 4 sisters. I don't remember the numbers now. And they live and pray with him. So it is like having a almost Roman Catholic community. There are some non-Catholics in that community, but by and large, it is a Catholic community living with him and praying with him.
Hmm. So what did that mean to you to have this sort of ecumenical dimension to the book?
Well, I suppose that I think that to be Catholic is this ability to acknowledge and value beauty and truth wherever they can be found outside the institutional
Catholic.
Sorry?
Small C Catholic.
Small C Catholic, exactly. But I think small C, but it is a bigger C than the big C in the sense of the capital C, because I think that this is what is Catholic being about. I mean, the great missionaries, like, you know, the Jesuits went to China or wherever, the first thing they do is trying to find what is beautiful and what is true in the culture there, and they use it as a basis for evangelization. So this is, being a Catholic means being truly persuaded that God is active everywhere, because God wants everyone to be saved, is active everywhere. And if he's active everywhere, even in the secular culture, even when you have the impression that God is not there, is not acting, if you really believe that, then you look for the signs of God's presence and action everywhere. So this is to be Catholic for me. And Justin, in this sense, has been truly Catholic in the sense of promoting something which has been written by someone who is not doesn't belong to his institutional church. And that's something that really makes me proud about it.
Mm. But you're not a Jesuit, you're a Benedictine,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So are there elements of both of those traditions in the book, or would you, how would you describe the spiritual grounding?
In terms of the Jesuit spirituality, I would say that certainly a lot of insistence on freedom in the second half of the book is something which I learned thanks to the Jesuit spirituality. I've had, over the years, in a monastery where I was in France, several preachers coming, and there was one in particular, a Jesuit, called Père Laplace. Was almost 90 at the time. It was an incredible preacher, wonderful one. And the whole retreat he preached was about freedom according to Jesuit spirituality. So this is one of the elements. The Benedictine one, I suppose, the book is made essentially by quotations of the Psalms. The Benedictine pray 7 times a day, in common, and they use the Psalms. The Psalms are really the material of the prayer. So it is something which, over the years, I've been a monk for 30 years now, something which has become part of myself, so part of my language. So when I try to express some things, the quotations of the Psalms come spontaneously to my mind. And this, I would say, is one of the elements of the Benedictine spirituality, which is filtered through in this book.
So why should someone pick this book up for Lent, whether they be the Archbishop of Canterbury or maybe a 20-year-old or in New York? Why is now a good time?
Well, because if you remember, on Ash Wednesday, we read this passage from the Gospel of Matthew, and there are three elements Jesus stresses when it comes to the right attitude of a Christian. Is a certain way of fasting, a certain way of doing charity, and a certain way of praying. Lent should be about certainly renewing a sense of what is important, what is essential, and hence the meaning of fasting, is a time of renewing our concern for other people, for each other, hence the element of charity. But it is also a moment to renew our commitment in our relationship with God, a time of discovering that even in the desert, even when we think that we are left to ourselves, God is the one whose presence becomes even more evident during those times. And prayer is, to me, fundamentally, essentially, the discovery of this presence of God in us and in our lives. Is this ability we that increases, really, the more we pray, to see Him everywhere. Hence, I think, yes, for Lent is one of the is very important because it focuses exactly on one of the pillars of the period of Lent.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I found really interesting about the book, Luigi, is the fact that you. I often find like spiritual writing to be like overly pious, and I struggle with it. And I felt like this, you very much rooted in, like you just said, God is present. And like, even in those moments when we're dealing with frustration, when we're dealing with things like lust, that you think God is present even in those moments. So yes. Were there certain kind of notions of, or like stereotypes that people have about spiritual writing that you were trying to dispel in writing this book?
Or even prayer itself. It seems like you were sort itself. Of like trying to tear down all these notions of prayer that people have.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I was asked to write this book by people who don't have time to pray. Professionals who live in London. In London, very much like New York, is a city where everyone runs all the time. I mean, that's and so how do you pray when you don't have time to pray? When there is no silence, there is always noise around you. And when there is no special setting, I mean, there is no church, there is no place where you can go and have a feeling that because this place is a church, God should be present in a special way. And the argument is that most of the time, one of the reasons why we don't pray is because we think that the only way we can do it is having the ideal conditions. Ideal conditions in terms of silence, in terms of time, and in terms of setting. The major inspiration of the book was precisely this, that, and this is a very personal thing, is that I find that I can pray absolutely everywhere. So even walking, you know, in the busy avenues of America just now, where people are pushing and running and honking of the cars and so on.
I say a lot of words when that happens, but I don't think they're prayers necessarily.
Prayers necessarily, what would come spontaneously to your mind.
Not yes, ones I mean, you would say to God.
although even saying those words to God, I think is part of what I say prayers about, but we can talk about that in a moment. But, you know, the thing is that when you develop this habit of talking to God, like you would talk to someone who is with you, walking by you, and sharing with him or with her whatever really comes to your mind, in a sense, whatever is important for you, or whatever frustrates you, or whatever makes you rejoice, is the essence of prayer. Prayer is really talking to someone who is there, and he's infinitely deeply interested in everything that happens in our lives.
It's interesting you say that because, like Olga, I don't generally like spiritual writing, but I really did like your book. And for me, it was because you kind of, it doesn't seem like you buy the excuse that it's just a matter of time. Like, you specifically say, like, we can just be lazy or maybe even afraid of what we will find if we go into prayer very deeply. So, you know, it's not a matter of time. Sometimes you really just don't want to pray and avoid it. And I find that to be my own experience. So I feel like your book was like a nice kick in the butt to just be like.
Okay, probably I want to say two things. You'll find both of them consoling. The first one is that I too don't like spiritual writings. Had someone told me that one day I would have written a book on prayer or a spiritual book, I would have hoped that this was not true, because I've never found this kind of literature inspiring. I find it very difficult to read most of those books, with very, very few exceptions. And the second thing is that when you say about the difficulty of prayer, the laziness when it comes to praying, or even more, this feeling that when a time comes to pray, I've always more important things to do, more pressing things to do, is something which I experience all the time. So even if I can genuinely say that prayer has been the most important thing in my life for the past, whatever, since I converted again to Catholicism when I was 16, immediately prayer became the core of my faith and my life. But you never reach a point in which prayer becomes something that you go to totally spontaneously and freely. There's always some resistance in us about it. Mm. And it is a bit like going to the gym. I don't know if you have this experience.
I don't go to the gym.
The thing about the gym is that, which I find, is that deciding to go there and going there is always painful, difficult. I always think, oh my God, I want to do something else and so on. Yeah. Once I'm there, then I start to do the exercises and I immerse myself into it. I like it. And with prayer often is the same thing, is that stopping, that's a thing, difficult thing. And even for one moment, even without changing your setting, if you're working in your office and decide, well, for one moment, I'm just, you know, close my eyes and say something to God. Well, paradoxically, even if this is so easy, it's something which we don't have the reflex of doing, and there is a lot of resistance in us to it. But the moment we do it, we realize immediately, oh my God, I need it so much. And it gives me so much peace straight away. And it enables me immediately to put a name onto whatever is the dominant feeling in my heart at this moment, and transforming it into something which is beautiful, that is a prayer, something which I say to God.
So it's something that we, you know, find a lot of peace in and need. So and you write that it's something that humans both really need, and it's something that we, as you said, we naturally shy away from.
Yes.
So why is God giving us this catch 22?
I suppose that this is part of being in relation with someone we cannot see, we cannot hear. I've never seen God. You might have. If you have, please tell me, because I die. I want to know if he has a beard. I mean, there's one of the things. Yeah.
Did Jesus always want to pray, or did he also have this rebellious heart that sometimes resisted prayer? Did he share that with humans?
I'm trying to think whether in his life he seemed to like prayer a lot.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So the evidence.
So like
I
us
see,
and everything except for sin and not wanting to
and
pray.
Not wanting not to pray. I suppose that for me, there are a lot of times in which I go to prayer really with joy, and I feel a desire for it. And a lot of times in which, as I said, it is difficult. And probably for Jesus, the fact of not, I mean, when we say he didn't commit sin, what does it mean? It means that there was no obstacle in his relation to the Father. There was nothing that really would prevent him from feeling constantly that this was something beautiful and desirable. Whereas for us, probably one of the consequences of what we call sin is that we are blind, or we become blind or insensitive to what we want most, to what we desire most, to what is going to give us the most or the greatest or the deepest peace and joy. And that's one of the sad elements of our situation as human beings, and hence the necessity to always be So why, a lot of people have asked me, why another book about prayer? There are hundreds of books about prayer. But in a sense, we have never been encouraged enough or definitely to pray. We need constantly to be encouraged again from a variety of viewpoints, from a number of witnesses and testimonies, because we constantly have to overcome this resistance, unfortunately, we have in us.
Yeah, and one thing I liked about your book is it was very much based in the Gospels, actually Psalms and Gospels. Yes. And so, yeah, it wasn't like you were trying to recreate something that we don't already have access to, but just like approaching it in a different way. And one thing you talk about is the difference between like prayers and prayer.
Yes.
Can you describe what you mean by that difference?
We need prayers. We need prayers. When I talk about prayers, the Psalms are prayers. The liturgy, I don't want to flatten the theological distinctions. I teach systematic theology. I taught liturgy for many years. So I don't want to, there are, when you talk to theologians or liturgists, they would be very kind of worried that you don't appreciate the importance of the Mass, of the Eucharist, of the Psalms, and so on and so forth.
If you're listening, you can skip ahead for the, like 45 seconds.
Yes.
Theologians and liturgists.
Yes, theologians. Yeah.
So they're not listening anymore.
They're not listening anymore. Thank God. Because they are so difficult. Do you know the difference between a terrorist and a liturgist? You can negotiate with a terrorist. So that's the truth. Prayers are those texts which we receive from the tradition, from scripture, like the Psalms, or from the life of the saints or from the church. And they are very important because by learning these words and by repeating them, we receive a framework that teaches us in which way to address God. But if the whole of our relationship with Him was confined to texts we receive from others, it would be very much like talking to someone who is a friend only through preconceived formulas, never talking spontaneously to someone. And as we know, a friendship cannot thrive unless I go through the risk of being tentative through talking spontaneously. So when I talk about prayer, the difference between prayers and prayer, prayer for me is the spontaneous mode of a relationship with God. And it is a difficult or can be more difficult because whenever you talk spontaneously, you make yourself more vulnerable, you expose yourself more. And this can be something a lot of people find difficult because they have this idea of God as being like this king or like this being that is so formidable and so that you have to approach him only through formalized ways. And having access to or going deeper into spiritual life is precisely this, coming to the realization that God is this father or this friend or this brother who really wants to be close to us. Augustine says he's closer to us than we ourselves are. And wants to share with us the whole of our lives, and that there is nothing trivial for God. There is nothing of the aspects of our life, even the smallest details, which we cannot turn into prayer the moment we say to them, to God.
One of my favorite lines in the book is something like, our prayers can be like far too spiritual and they're asphyxiated by good manners.
Good manners. Yes.
Good manners. What are, so like, is that what you're talking about?
Do you curse at God?
Can we curse at God?
Do you curse at God?
Yeah.
I express my frustration to God very openly and very honestly. So sometimes I really tell him, you are hopeless. I've done that in prayer. Oh, really, I don't get you. Or really, God? I mean, you know, I'd really do that. Because if I feel it, why should I not tell him this? And we have main great examples in scripture. I mean, we have Job. Job is the guy who cursed the day he was born and vents all his frustration to God. Or Jeremiah does the same thing. Or even Jesus. I mean, Jesus, when he's in the cross, says to God, why have you abandoned me? Why have you forsaken me? Which can be seen as the greatest blasphemy in history, but God is big enough to take in everything. And what makes the difference between a blasphemy, a curse, and a prayer is that a blasphemy is something we say about God. A curse is something we say about a God in whom we don't really, a God we don't really trust, in whom we don't really believe. A prayer is, however hard the content can be, something becomes a prayer the moment we say it to him, the moment he's part of a relationship.
So you're in the U.S. now, and every time there's a tragic event in this country, we seem to get into this big fight about thoughts and prayers, giving your thoughts and prayers for the victims of a school shooting or another event. How do you feel about that kind of very public display of prayer? Is there a place for that? Is that the wrong way to approach prayer? If you were in the U.S., would you like tweet your thoughts and prayers to people in tragedies?
I tend to think that there is never a wrong way of praying. The moment we pray in the sense of calling God into the picture, especially when we are confronted with the unsayable, with the beyond horrible, these are the moments in which referring to God in whichever way, even if it is a very secular way of doing it, is a way of acknowledging that this is something beyond us. This is something which cannot understand. And it is also, it creates immediately a community, because referring to God in these occasions and saying thoughts and prayers can seem or can look very formal. But most of the time when I hear it, it sounds to me as people saying, look, I don't know what to say about that. So the only thing I can say to you now is that I hope, whether my belief in this is strong or weak, that there is some reality, some being, something that can help us all together to make sense of this or to cope with this. So I would never despise these thoughts and prayers. I would wish, certainly, that this was a much deeper feeling, a much truer prayer. And if it was a truer prayer, it would never be just thoughts and prayers, but thoughts and prayers that become action. So without saying, I don't want to hear of that, I would say, let's hear more, but more in terms of something that becomes reality.
I guess the thing that I struggle with is that, as you say, things that don't sound like prayers can be prayers.
Yes.
Conversely, things that sound like prayers could not be prayer, theoretically, right? And so when people in powerful positions say things just like, knee-jerk thoughts and prayers, it can seem like a temptation to cynicism rather than actual engagement with any God.
Yes. Well, if it is actively a way of shying away from the issue, of just being purely formal about it, if it comes from a heart that has no real compassion for the situation or the person, then in this case, it is true that it's something horrible, can be horrible. But the problem is that we don't know what is in the heart of people. So even when
much as I wish I could,
and pretend to,
and I do pretend,
But even when the sentence comes from someone I disagree with politically, still I don't want to judge his intention. What I will say to him or to her is that thank you for this, but if it is real, it should go further. It should become something more than just saying, you know, thoughts and prayer.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Well, thank you, Luigi. This has been really, really great. We've got one final question for you. If you could canonize anyone, living or dead, Catholic or non-Catholic, who would it be and why?
Oh, dear. This is a difficult question. I don't have a name, but I would look for someone who is not religious, is not overtly Christian. Someone who does what he does because he thinks that or believes in humanity, is compassionate, and is sensitive to the needs of people. I look out for these people because I think that religious people very often can use their religion as an alibi, as a coat, as a protection, as something that gives them a sense of being just because they are religious. Whereas I find that a lot of people who are not overtly religious often try harder, much harder, because they rely on doing the right thing to think of themselves that they are the right person or good persons. And I want to learn from a secular culture. We are too tempted very often in our religious world to despise it or to be at war with it, not want to listen to it. I think we should engage with it.
So saint, secular, humanist.
Saint nuns.
Yes. Yes. With discernment, obviously. Always,
of course.
But yes.
All right. Luigi, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for joining us.
And the name of the book is Say It to God. Where can people find it? Amazon?
Amazon. Yeah. Yes.
Say It to God. And it's the official prayer book for the Archbishop of Canterbury for his Lenten practice.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Listeners, have you ever heard one of our interviews and been like, man, sounds like there is some great stuff, like maybe Zach's jokes, cut out of the...
left on the chopping block.
Left in the editing room floor? Well, do I have a special surprise for you. We're starting a Patreon page. We've been so
What's
great...
What's Patreon?
Patreon is a platform where there will be a link in our show notes where you can pledge a monthly donation to get extra access and also support the show. Mm-hmm. So we've been really blessed and grateful to get this thing off the ground, but we need your help to keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make this mutually beneficial. And so we've been recording via video our interviews. And so we're going to be posting those on our Patreon page. So if you give $5 a month or more, you're going to get access to that and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, like a monthly chat with your dear host.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some Jesuitical swag too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So check out the Patreon page. Please support us. We love you.
Our Jesuit overlords can only be so benevolent.
Yes, it's true. All right, should we get into some listener feedback?
Yes. So we got a bunch of good emails this week. One that I really liked was from Daniel Harris, who listened to our episode last week with the two of the hosts from Unorthodox, a Jewish podcast produced by Tablet. And he was listening to this with great interest because he comes from a family where, like, 5 out of 6 of his aunts and uncles are in Catholic Jewish marriages, which
wow.
is just like crazy.
Yeah.
So he has a bunch of Jewish cousins, and he said listening to our show made him really want to like reach out to them and talk to them about like what, you know, the differences and similarities between their faith traditions.
Yeah, Daniel, I want to hear about how that goes when you do that.
Please write us back.
Or maybe record those conversations.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, now it's time for Consolations and Desolations, the part of our show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was harder to find God. What do you have, Olga?
So I've got a consolation this week. Along with what Unorthodox asked us to give up last week for Lent, I've also decided that I'm going to take my prayer life much more seriously this Lent. So I'm going to pray every day, like during the workday, when I get home, when I'm leaving. And normally I struggle to kind of maintain this consistency because I'm always like, I mentioned this on previous episodes, but I'm always like, you have to pray correctly. You have to have the right music. You have to be in the right mood. You have to be in a meditative state and all of these things. And I was like, you know what? You got to throw all that BS out the window. And I've really just kind of been focused on just talking to God and being present and not performing. I don't know why I have this idea that like my prayer life has to look a certain way or my faith has to be performed a certain way. So for Lent, I'm just immersing myself in being with God. And I've like been doing the examine with Father James Martin, which we've also mentioned, and also Pray As You Go, which is a devotional daily prayer app. And
oh, I love that one.
I can do it on my walk to the train. And it's been consoling to be in that state of mind before and after work. So that's my consolation. It's only been a week. It might change toward the end of Lent, but
Mike,
for now,
even better. What do you have, Zach?
This week, I have a desolation. I found out last week that my cousin, who I'm really close with, is getting deployed to Iraq. Was not something super expected, and it's not something I know a ton about. And so there's this very strong feeling of lack of control. And so really the only response in prayer then is to totally trust and surrender that to God. And I know that rationally, but that's, I know that's where I'm supposed to be, and I'm not there yet, because I don't want to feel that necessarily. I don't really want to hand any of that over. And so the desolation is knowing where God is leading me, and I'm not ready to go yet. But I mean, I think that might be the first step, is knowing, having the desire to. But that's what's been desolating this past week. Yeah. Ashley, how about you?
Oh, we've got a lot of prayerful consolations and desolations.
We should be every the season.
Right. So I have a consolation, which might, when I say it, it might not sound like a consolation, but I was starting to read the book by our guest this week, Luigi Gioia. Did I get it? Yeah. Say It to God. And I find myself like crying at my desk. And I guess it kind of hit me that I had had some events and relationships in my life that had been kind of building up this sadness that I really had not taken to prayer, and felt like I could not take to prayer. And the language in this book just really spoke to me. It was, you know, as I said in the interview, it was very, you know, direct and simple. And so, you know, I had to leave the office and just walk down Sixth Avenue crying for a while. And I've done that before, but this was the first time where I actually like felt God's presence in that sadness, and felt like I was, you know, in that, in my sadness with God. It was something I could share with him in just like a very raw, real way. So that was consoling. Even though it was sad, it was consoling.
Right, right.
So yeah, thanks, Luigi.
Andy got you to step away from your desk.
Yeah.
Impressive. All right.
All right. Jesuitical is brought to you by America Media and produced by Eloise Blondio. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup S.J. Engineering by Angelo Jesus Conta. Adverbs provided by Kari Nelson. Our new logo is also by Angelo Jesus Conta. And you can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and leave us a review. Shout out this week to Scott Pichard and Zag95. And this week, find us on Patreon. And finally, send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americamedia.org. For America Media, I'm Ashley McKinless with Olga Segura and Zach Davis. We will see you next week.